So we're going to have two, I think, good responses by the rating agencies, one not so good response.
The Walker administration prepares to sell bonds for paying pension obligations. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, October 7th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, just when biologists thought it was not going to happen.
Next thing I know, I get an email from one of our biologists saying the walrus are hauling out, and I'm like, ah!
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Alaska has one of the highest suicide rates in the nation, but together we can change that one life at a time. The statewide Suicide Prevention Council has the resources and training to prevent suicide and support healing for individuals in need. Be the one to ask if someone is thinking about suicide and connect them to help. Visit StopSuicideAlaska.org to learn more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Mental Health Trust.
Standard & Poor's announced today it expects to lower Alaska's credit ratings if the state government sells bonds to pay for public worker pensions. Governor Bill Walker's administration plans to sell up to $3.3 billion in these bonds. An analyst for the credit rating agency said the bond sale would sharply increase the state's debt burden. It also would lower the state's capacity to issue debt in the future. And the bond sale adds risk to the state's budget if investment returns are lower than the cost of the bonds. Traders use credit ratings to assess risk. Lower ratings generally translate into the state paying more to bondholders. The three credit rating agencies differ in their response to the state's plans. Fitch rated the pension obligation bonds themselves one notch below the state's overall rating, which it did not change. And Moody's didn't make an announcement today. State officials say they don't expect Moody's to lower the state's rating based on the bond sale. State Revenue Commissioner Randall Hoffbeck says the state plans to move forward with its plan to approach potential bond purchasers.
We'll see how the market responds. And then based on what kind of market response we get and the S&P's statement that they're going to downgrade us, we'll make an ultimate decision. We'll weigh the pros and cons and decide whether to go forward or not.
S&P did point out the state benefits from having budget reserves that are 2.5 times its annual budget, and it has the potential to close its budget gap by drawing on permanent fund earnings, according to a statement from analyst Gabriel Pettick. The state is obligated to pay public workers $6 billion more in future pensions than it has in assets. Lawmakers, including Wasilla Republican Senator Mike Dunleavy, have said the bond sale is too risky. But Hoffbeck says the bond sale could be the best way to close the pension fund gap.
We're going to have two, good responses by the rating agencies, one not so good response.
Hoffbeck says the state could close the sales the week of October 31st. Governor Bill Walker is going back to South Korea tomorrow for the second time this month to pitch his gas line plan. It's Walker's third trip to Asia as governor. He was invited back to South Korea by the Future Consensus Institute, a nonprofit research group based in Seoul. The Future Consensus Institute is paying for the governor's portion of the trip. Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation President Keith Meyer will join the governor. According to the governor's office, Meyer's travel expenses are not covered by the Future Consensus Institute. A press release stated that Walker and Meyer will discuss Alaska's oil and gas potential with the Deputy Prime Minister of Japan, in addition to leaders in Korea, China, Russia, and the UK. Representatives of the Arctic Council member nations wrapped up a meeting in Portland, Maine this week. American Ambassador David Balton says the officials heard updates on top council priorities, including black carbon reduction and resilience for Arctic communities. The Arctic Council turned 20 last month. For the first decade of the Arctic Council's existence, interest in it did not extend much beyond the Arctic nations. But Balton says now the world is paying attention to the region.
And the Arctic Council has emerged as the premier international forum for dealing with the key issues of the Arctic region. It has a broad mandate. It's expanding its scope and reach in any number of ways. And so I think there is a growing awareness.
Bolton says the Arctic Council's work on environmental monitoring and assessment is informing global efforts to contend with climate change. He cited the example of the Polar Code that takes effect in January to improve maritime safety, saying the code to better regulate polar shipping largely came from information supplied by the Arctic Council. As Bolton spoke to reporters this morning, the power spot of international Arctic discussion had already shifted from Maine to Iceland, where the annual Arctic Circle Assembly is underway. It's a gathering of some 2,000 people. In one of the first speeches there, U.S. Arctic Representative Robert Papp called for an international ice-breaking force. Papp, according to High North News, says the icebreakers could be jointly operated for the common good, like the Enterprise on Star Trek. About 1,000 walruses are hauled out on a barrier island near the village of Point Lay, about 180 miles southwest of Barrow. The haulout is part of an unnerving trend. This year marks the 8th time in a decade that large numbers of walruses have crowded onto land in the area. The animals have been driven to shore as sea ice recedes, limiting access to their usual feeding grounds. But this year's haulout, so late in the fall, was a surprise. Andrea Medeiros is a spokesperson for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. She says scientists were pretty sure it wasn't going to happen this year. And then,
next thing I know, I get an email from one of our biologists saying the walrus are hauling out, and I'm like, ah!
Residents in Point Lay contacted the Fish and Wildlife Service with the news this morning. Medeiros says the haulout is forming about a month later than in the past. Usually at this time, walruses are heading south to Russian waters for the winter. And although sea ice receded to its second lowest level on record this summer, there was lingering ice over the walruses' traditional feeding grounds. The Fish and Wildlife Service and the native village of Point Lay are asking people to stay away from the area during the haulout to avoid disturbing the animals and causing a stampede.
And the risk there is when they are on shore and the animals get spooked, that the larger animals will flee to the water and crush the small animals in the process. And so it leads to a lot of preventable mortality.
Biologists are continuing to monitor the haulout as it forms. In the past, up to 40,000 animals have gathered in the area. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Sitka resident Linda Benkin is honored at the White House.
Mentor young fishermen, share data with young fishermen, and help them be successful with running their businesses in ways that also sustain the fisheries for the future.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
The White House today honored Sitka's Linda Benkin as a champion of change for her work to improve fishing sustainability. Benkin directs the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association. She has been a commercial fisherman for more than 30 years. At a White House forum today, she said fishermen are great problem solvers.
They have to be. When you're out on the water 90 miles offshore and something breaks, you have to know how to fix it, and you have to know how to get yourself back to shore and keep your crew safe.
Benkin says her organization and the National Fishing Coalition she works with aim to harness that ingenuity. She's worked to involve fishermen in research projects to ensure healthy fish populations and improve ocean science. Benkin says they also use their networks to help new fishermen get off to a good start.
So having people who are established, that know how to avoid sensitive habitat, know how to avoid bycatch hotspots, mentor young fishermen, share data with young fishermen, and help them be successful with running their businesses in ways that also sustain the fisheries for the future.
Benkin was one of 12 people the White House honored as champions of change in seafood sustainability. The Obama White House created the Champions of Change Awards as part of the president's Win the Future initiative, a key theme in his 2011 State of the Union address. Alaska and British Columbia officials signed a statement of cooperation Thursday aimed at protecting rivers that flow through the province and the state. But transboundary mine critics say it's not strong enough. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The document is a result of about a year of talks following citizen warnings about BC mines and mining projects near the border. Local and tribal governments, as well as fishing and environmental groups, say such mines could release pollution that would damage Alaska fisheries and traditional food gathering. British Columbia Mines Minister Bill Bennett says the agreement will give the state more input into the province's environmental assessment and permitting process. He says the agreement will establish a technical committee of experts, not politicians, to set up new water monitoring systems.
We need baseline information so that we know whether there's going to be or will be impact in the future from mining operations. We need these folks to figure out how we're going to pay for it, who's going to do it.
Alaska Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott called the terms another step in Alaska's commitment to open and transparent collaboration on the issue.
It creates a technical working group to allow us to essentially put our hands on the power levers of the British Columbia government in its entire regulatory process of permitting mines and monitoring mines.
The agreement was drawn up with feedback from mining, government, fisheries, community and environmental groups, as well as state and provincial officials. Bennett says his ministry also reached out to First Nations members living in affected areas. He says similar outreach happened in Alaska.
So I think on both sides of the border, we're quite proud of the fact that this is not something that the two governments are imposing. This is something that has, I think, developed from the grassroots.
Some people disagree. Ketchikan's Rob Sanderson Jr. works with the United Tribal Transboundary Mining Work Group. He says tribal governments on both sides of the border should be co-signers of the agreement. He also says it doesn't address their most fundamental concerns.
It's not our business to issue permits to mining companies. Our business, in my opinion, is to maintain our culture for all future generations. This agreement does not do that.
Sanderson and other mine critics say this statement of cooperation, part of a larger memorandum of understanding, has little power to make significant mine safety improvements. They want the state to continue pursuing involvement of the International Joint Commission. That's a U.S.-Canada panel handling cross-border water disputes.
This memorandum of agreement throws a wrench into that. It's because when you're looking at it from the outside, you know, they're saying, well, probably maybe we don't need it. You know, the state has a memorandum with the British Columbian government, so, you know, why go there?
Lieutenant Governor Mallott says the statement of cooperation will not interfere with the state's pursuit of Joint Commission action. BC mining companies and regulators say the existing process already safeguards transboundary rivers. That's a position taken by Alaska officials in past years before citizen concerns led to talks that resulted in this agreement. I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
FEMA will be stepping in to fund landslide mapping in Sitka. The Alaska Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys, who will be leading the research project, announced the news earlier this week. Deanne Stevens, a chief geologist for DGGS, says the agency has been given $110,000 for 2 years of research through a program called FEMA Risk Map. The goal is to create a comprehensive map of landslide risk in the Sitka area. Sitka was given a competitive edge for this funding through new LIDAR data collected by DGGS this summer in partnership with the National Park Service and U.S. Army's Corps of Engineers Cold Regions Research and Engineering Laboratory. The data set, which mapped Sitka's topography with a laser beam, will provide a useful foundation for the team's work.
I'm very pleased that we're going to be able to help out the people in Sitka with this. They've been so responsive and so accommodating and so helpful in the immediate response work that we did there and the field work that we've done since then. And we really look forward to working with them more and giving them what they need to have a safe community as they move forward and start planning for the future.
In addition to the LIDAR data, the research team will analyze already existing geologic data and modeling algorithms for landslide hazard. The research project officially began on Saturday, October 1st, and the final report is due in September of 2018. But Stevens adds the data will be made available to the public as it's collected.
There won't be any delay in sharing this information with the community and emergency responders.
FEMA was already working to develop a multi-hazard risk report for the Sitka area when the Kramer Avenue landslide occurred. The slide, triggered last August by heavy rainfall, tore through a subdivision and took the lives of three men. Since then, the city has contracted with the Seattle-based geotechnical firm Shannon and Wilson to develop a comprehensive landslide map and recommendations for mitigation in the South Kramer Avenue and the Gavin Hill area. That South Kramer report was published in February, and the Gavin Hill report is due in December. City Administrator Mark Gorman says the mapping will inform how Sitka develops moderate and high-risk zones and how properties in those zones are managed. Better educational outcomes for kids statewide is the aim of a new program being offered by THREAD, a child care resource and referral network. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
THREAD is a nonprofit funded by the Department of Health and Social Services and community donations. Their program, Learn and Grow, Alaska's quality recognition and improvement system, is designed to help evaluate and increase the quality of child care centers. Of the estimated 456 licensed child care centers statewide, 53 have signed up for the Learn and Grow process in communities like Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, and Ketchikan. While there are state requirements that all child care centers must meet to be licensed, Learn and Grow Director Megan Johnson views her program as a next step for centers to increase their standards in education and care.
So the idea is to funnel resources into the programs as they achieve certain levels of quality so that they have that funding to continue it, because it costs money to pay their teachers a higher wage, costs money to send them to school for professional development, costs money for materials and resources in the classroom.
Learn and Grow measures the quality and growth of each participating child care center in levels. Level 1 requires that all workers in a child care center be enrolled in the Learn and Grow program, and administrators must take a training course. Johnson says about 22% of their centers have already met that benchmark. Level 2 requires more administrative training in business operations such as budgeting and human resources, as well as child development training. Having already met their goal of signing up 10% of eligible child care centers in Learn and Grow, the next step is to ensure that certain numbers of those centers reach level 1 and level 2 benchmarks within Learn and Grow.
We said that we wanted, of those participating programs, that about 80% of them would achieve a level 1, that first level of quality, and then we said about 20% would achieve level 2. So 20% requires the administrators to acquire a credential. It's really where we're requiring most of the training.
Johnson says, through partnerships with government and communities, Learn and Grow is on track to meet and surpass their yearly fiscal goals for quality child care in the state. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
GCI, serving more than 100 Alaska communities. GCI's Alaska Born and Raised campaign celebrates the people who call Alaska home. GCI.com/share your story.
The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 Directory for Older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Eric Bork. This week on AK, how do you build a swim culture where one has never existed? That's a question Bethel's first swim team is trying to answer. Even though Bethel sits on a river, many people there don't yet know how to swim. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur has the story.
We're going to start with our freestyle set and move into butterfly.
Erica Andrews is Bethel Regional High School's counselor.
Two, one, go!
She's also Bethel's first swim coach ever.
It was interesting the first day. I had about 15, 16 that came. Some that were pretty good at swimming, some that had never swam in their lives before.
Now, more than a month into the season, there's a dozen swimmers in grades 7 through 12. Most of the teenagers had never swum before, at least not competitively. They could move from one end of the pool to the other, but not much farther, and not with proper strokes. Most grew up in Bethel, where there'd never been a place to swim. Anyone who had learned didn't do it here.
Every summer we go down to Oregon, and so I started taking swim lessons down there.
My parents are from Utah, and so when we visit my grandparents, I learned how to swim there.
My grandma was a lifeguard when she lived in Florida and taught swim lessons, so when we went to visit her, she helped teach all us kids that.
But most of the kids weren't learning laps or strokes, at least not the kind Andrews is teaching.
Okay, so what are the most important concepts about swimming that you're trying to teach right now?
A consistent kick and high elbows in freestyle. Never stop moving your arms and never stop moving your feet, and you won't stop moving.
The team gets up early. Most practices start at 6 a.m. School starts at 8:15. 10th grader and basketball player Gareth Rice says the waking up part is hard, but the actual swimming part, that's even harder.
There have been limits that I wasn't able to reach through any other sports or activities that I found in swimming that I was able to push beyond that I never knew I could ever do before.
What does that mean?
Swimming, it just works a lot more. It's working everything simultaneously, and you have to be in sync, which you do in basketball, but I'd say in swimming a bit more. And it's more of a constant work.
Unlike many of the swimmers, 10th grader Skylar Sargent isn't training for another sport. In fact, she says the whole sports thing is new to her.
I am a nerd on the swim team. I'm a very fit nerd. That is what I am.
Sargent says in fourth grade, she gave a speech to city council, asking them to build a pool. Now it's here, but she says people are still becoming aware of it. She calls the pool a phantom presence.
Like, people know it's here, but they just, like, they can sense it, but they don't really go to it, or it's not a real thing.
What's it gonna take to change that?
Just get more people interested.
But has the pool made people safer on the river? Most of the swimmers, like 7th grader Jordan Wheeler, say yes.
Even with that life vest on, you still need to know how to keep yourself up. So I feel safer for me and safer for everyone else because more people know how to swim now.
The team is expected to compete at least once this year, probably against an Anchorage team. Coach Andrews calls this year a building season for the team and the community. At the Bethel Pool, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week, we're hearing from Jackie Lambert from Kotzebue. Lambert is a volunteer here at Alaska Public Media and a student at UAA.
I guess the biggest thing that I want to do is become a reporter, and I really want to be a bilingual reporter for KOTZ in Kotzebue. They don't have any reporters in Kotzebue right now. Well, we have reporters based out of either Anchorage or somewhere. I'm not sure where she's based out of, but it's for the Arctic Sounder, but there's nothing for the radio station. So I really want to bring that back. It's really important to me because the radio station reaches out to the villages and there's a lot of elders who listen to the radio a lot. And it'd be nice for them to hear it in their own native language, and it could inspire younger people to start to learn it more too, to understand what I'm saying. I went to college at the University of Idaho in Moscow, Idaho, and then I spent a semester living in Los Angeles, California. Yeah, there was just no way for me to put my heart and everything into it when I was out of state because I was disconnected, sort of. I was so determined. I was like, I'm never gonna go back, you know, like, I'm not interested. But then the longer that I was away, the more I grew an appreciation for Alaska, and I just loved Alaska a lot after I left. Sometimes I get asked the weirdest questions about what it's like living in Alaska, and they think that we're not a part of America, but we really are. I actually met someone who didn't even believe in Eskimos before. That was really weird. He thought that we were like mermaids, you know, like, do they exist or do they not exist? And, you know, like, I've had people ask me if we use American money or if we need a passport to come to Alaska or to go to Kotzebue and things like that. I laugh about it, but I also, like, let them know, like, you know, you're very undereducated about this, and I'm gonna teach you about what Alaska really is like.
Jackie Lambert lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Anna Rose MacArthur and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Eric Bork.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman and Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Rachel Waldholtz and Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage, and Emily Kwong in Sitka. Our audio engineer is Eric Bork. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds on the web at arcticwirerope.com. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 directory for older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG. As an Alaskan, you love your salmon, but do you know the things you can do every day to make sure they're here for your children's children? Well, find out what you can do to ensure healthy runs for future generations of Alaskans at salmonproject.org/20ways. This message is sponsored by the Salmon Project.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.